Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim joins us by phone from New York today, where he's going to be doing some work up there for CNN. And Jim, it's just a shame there's no news today that could potentially be fodder for your discussions later today.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I pity any reporter who put out some sort of really detailed, well-done, thorough study on, like, some civil war in some third world country or something like that. It's just not going to break through on a day like today. It's one of those days where, you know, they announced the economy grew 3.3%, Greg, and that's not even our good martini. That's not even – oh, yeah, that happened.
Yes, exactly. But that is worth pointing out. And, of course, Trump's reaction to that was that it would have been even greater without the hurricanes, which is probably true. So, over 3% is good news. But our actual good martini comes to us from the United States Senate. And that has not been something we have been able to say for most of 2017. Here's the Politico version of the story. Senate Republicans got some sorely needed momentum behind their tax overhaul Tuesday as key GOP swing votes inched closer to backing the legislation, after Senate leaders launched a frenzied round of negotiations to convince the holdouts. The Senate Budget Committee voted to advance the GOP tax reform bill on Tuesday on a party-line vote, with both Senators Bob Corker, Tennessee, and Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, backing the measure a day after threatening to withhold their support. The critical vote came after President Trump came to Capitol Hill to rally the troops in the tax battle. Johnson voted for the tax bill after a back-and-forth with Trump during the lunch. His big concern was that he thought the bill was too nice to corporations and not nice enough to pass through businesses or smaller businesses. In the end, Jim, Corker was thought to be a possible problem here, given his feud with Trump. It's gone through regular order, so that should be a good thing for John McCain. That was his big problem with health care. And we're also hearing that Susan Collins seems favorable to the bill now. So the Republicans, at least at the moment, have some momentum here.
They do, and it's not something we've been able to say all throughout the year. And look, it's worth noting that at least the version that passed the Senate committee yesterday, in addition to having a bunch of provisions that most people will like, I'll get to that in a second, it also includes a provision to eliminate the individual mandate for Obamacare. So you would no longer be legally required to purchase health insurance if you don't want to. Now, for obvious reasons, it's often a good thing to do. But if you feel like you look at the premiums and the copays and the deductibles, you think it's a terrible deal, and you prefer to take your chances without health insurance and pay out of pocket when you need care, you have that option. The government will no longer punish you by laying additional taxes upon you. If both of these things get signed into law, you've taken away one of the parts of Obamacare that Republicans dislike the most, and you've got a sweeping tax cut enacted. That would actually be a reasonably, you throw in VA reform and everything else that's been done so far this year, and you manage to avoid a government shutdown. Well, then actually maybe President Trump did have a decent opening year. Going through the version of the tax bill that got through the Senate committee yesterday, look, it does keep seven brackets. I know some people definitely wanted to see a much simpler format there, but most people would still get the House version only had four brackets, but this is still a tax cut for lots and lots of people. Doubles the standard deduction, eliminates personal exemptions, which means if you have a big family, it's possible you're going to find that amount of exemption not as high as it was previously. It fully repeals state and local tax deductions. This is where you're going to run into trouble, because House Republicans managed to get their version of the bill through by allowing people to deduct property taxes up to $10,000. This was kind of a bone that was thrown to the, Republican House members from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois, and California. Those are the states where they'd be hit the hardest. It was a really good map by the Tax Foundation that looked at this and said, look, most people don't pay more than $10,000 in property taxes. So you'd probably be in a situation where you're eliminating some portion of your deduction, but you're not losing the whole thing. The Senate bill would hit these people very hard. This is going to have to be reconciled in conference, and it's going to be, I expect, a very big fight. Expanding the child tax credit, many of my colleagues at National Review have said that's a really important element. Keeps the mortgage interest deduction as is. Homeowners and home construction industry will prefer that. It preserves the estate tax, but basically the doubled exemption levels now mean that if you're an individual, if you're leaving your heirs like $5.5 million, you will not pay estate tax, nearly $11 million for a married couple. I don't know about you, Greg. That sounds okay to me. If I have $12 million to leave to my sons, then I'll they can pay the taxes. That'll be fine. So all in all, look, on the tax cut front, this is, you know, the Republicans had a pretty darn good day. I think it is now more likely that it passes. The details still going to be determined. It's going to be very interesting to see how much enormous fight there is over the Senate version, because as I mentioned earlier, we know it's going to have to go to conference, and that whatever comes out of conference will be the final version, assuming, of course, the conference version can pass the House and Senate.
Exactly. And it's interesting. I was speaking with Dave Bratt, of the congressman from Virginia, yesterday, and he said the economic growth we were just talking about, 3.3%, and other positive indicators throughout the year, especially on Wall Street, is that they're expecting the Republicans to get the job done. That's why we've seen a lot of this positive growth. And so getting it done, he thinks, will be a very good sign. If they can't get it done, expect some very different indicators soon on Wall Street. So some of that's already been baked into the cake. The Dow certainly liked the news yesterday, going up over 250 points. So let's move on to the bad martini, though, because while the Senate Budget Committee gave us something to be cautiously optimistic about on Tuesday, the North Koreans did not. NBC News. Kim Jong-un's latest ballistic missile test flew 10 times higher than the International Space Station and twice as high as any satellite in low Earth orbit, according to South Korea's military. Although analysts were scrambling to learn what they could about the North Korean launch, Pyongyang said it had tested a new type of missile named the Hwasong-15. Kim's secretive state claimed it was carrying a super large heavy warhead that was capable of striking the entire U.S. mainland. But analysts say that based on the current evidence, it's hard to prove or debunk the North's claim that it can now hit far away American targets such as New York or Washington. The missile was fired on what is called a lofted trajectory, meaning it was aimed at a steep angle and traveled very high, but landed relatively close to the launch site. It landed in the Sea of Japan about 600 miles away. So think of it more as a really well-struck pop fly as opposed to a home run. But Jim, they're clearly getting more competent here. If they did launch it at a more sinister angle, it looks like it's got the power to get somewhere where we don't want it to get. And that's obviously not good. A competent North Korea with its military missile program is not something we want to see.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Greg. For those of us with long memories, it feels like the discussion of North Korea and its missile program has been, yeah, they're firing missiles, but they can't hit us. Okay, they're firing missiles, but they can only hit the edges of Alaska and Hawaii. Okay, they can hit Alaska and Hawaii, but they can't hit the U.S. mainland. Well, okay, maybe they could hit the western edge of the U.S. mainland. They're all a bunch of blue states. We don't care about them anyway. Don't worry. We'll get to, you know, it's like this plot from Superman with Lex Luthor. We'll get some new oceanfront property in Nevada if the North Koreans attack the West Coast. Well, okay, maybe they can hit the country. And now, of course, it's pretty clear that almost the entire United States, I believe, is now within the range of these missiles. So now, as we've also noticed in the past year or two, they're getting better at miniaturizing their nuclear weapons. The detonations appear to be more likely to be more accurate, more likely to detonate properly. I mean, they have not merely a atomic bomb, but now effectively a thermonuclear bomb, a much larger scale of destruction. So the odds of them successfully hitting some of the largest cities in the United States is now, you know, the risk is not zero. The risk is there's something there. And it's very strange the way North Korea becomes a major story for the news for a couple of days, and then we forget about it, we move on. And you know, the threat, whether or not we're discussing the threat is still there. And this entire theme of, well, we need to rely on China, we need China to apply more pressure. Look, whatever they're doing, it's not doing enough. And it may be time to look at other options. Unfortunately, almost any military conflict contains a great possibility of escalation and all of a sudden the use of these nuclear weapons. It is, you know, deeply troubling and a nagging sense that we're not handling this with the seriousness it deserves.
Yes, and that's been a problem for multiple administrations. President Trump said, whatever it was yesterday, we'll take care of it or we'll handle it. He didn't offer any more specifics than that, and perhaps that's good at the moment. But as you mentioned, options are few. they would seem to run through Beijing, but they have not taken a lot of initiative over the past 20 years to actually get serious about this, even though it should be in their interest. So let's move on to our crazy martini, Jim. And for that, we also stick with NBC News, although they would rather we were talking about any other story that they were reporting on today. Here is how the Today Show opened today, with hosts Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb.
Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment. While it is the first complaint about his behavior in the over 20 years he has been at NBC News, we were also presented with reason to believe this may not have been an isolated incident.
And further reports, the New York Post suggesting that this woman alleges she was sexually assaulted by Lauer at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. So, Jim, a lot of people obviously at NBC are stunned. This continues a trend that we've seen now with Charlie Rose and Mark Halperin, Bill O'Reilly, obviously, lots of people in the media. What do you make of this Lauer bombshell?
You know, Greg, it really is a bombshell. When the news came out this morning, you kind of left scratching your head because you realize those of us who watched the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade just a couple of days ago, Matt Lauer was co-hosting in his traditional seat in that role. Apparently, he was scheduled to host the or co-host the lighting of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree tonight. This clearly must have developed very, very recently, and the fact that they were not suspending. This is not a suspension pending the conclusion of investigation. Whatever is going on there, it must have been really serious to get NBC to just take this flat, direct action. There are a lot of rumors floating around about what they are. I'm not sure it would really be appropriate to talk about it unless we know these things are true. But we know whatever it is, it's got to be really, really serious. And the only thing else I kind of left scratching my head about, I don't know if that's a nice position to put Savannah Guthrie in. Obviously, you know, NBC and the Today Show are probably going to want to break the news that they have the decisions that they have made. On the other hand, she's been working with him several years now. I can only imagine the thoughts going through her head, and she talked a little bit about the difficulty of rectifying the person you've known all this time and the allegations that are really at this point unspecified but apparently very serious going on that prompted this decision. I think this probably would have been better for it to be handled by whoever at NBC News knew Matt Lauer the least, just out of sensitivity to the colleagues who are probably reeling and trying to balance, you know, their positive interactions with their coworker with the allegations. Other observation of this, Greg, is let's imagine it's a year ago. You go back in time to November 2016. Trump has won the election, but he has not yet taken the oath of office. And you tell people, no, 1 year from now, sexual harassment allegations will have not derailed the Trump presidency. And in fact, in a presidency said every conceivable controversy. I at least have not heard about Trump doing anything inappropriately in this category in office. But sex harassment allegations have ended the careers of Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and Mark Halperin and Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey. And quite a few folks, they're the top guy at Vox and the New Republic and a whole bunch of other publications. It was very interesting last year to see the coverage of the allegations against Roger Ailes, the allegations against Bill O'Reilly, and there was this perception of, what do you expect of, Fox News, and Fox News has a terrible toxic masculinity culture, and these men are pigs, and they run roughshod all over the women coworkers and employees, and aren't they terrible, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think we can say this was a Fox News problem anymore. I'm kind of surprised and appalled, considering how comparatively staid and boring and pleasant my present and past workplaces have been. But apparently, this is a television or media problem. Apparently, this is not as rare as I thought it was, and apparently, this is quite tolerated. The bigger name you are, the more powerful you are, probably the more tolerated it is. And this feels like a long overdue correction. So, shocking, horrifying, appalling. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, Lauer has to say about the allegations at some point. We will see how this shakes out, but all those jokes about there should be a pool for which celebrity goes down next. But this way, the odds of there being another celebrity seem are pretty darn likely.
Certainly seems that way. Do you get the sense that somehow we've entered the plot device from Back to the Future 2 and entered an alternate reality for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 or longer years here?
Well, okay, so it's interesting to say, because in that theory, it was not just that evil Biff had taken over Hill Valley and a good portion of the world. If you look in the background of the newspaper of the Back to the Future movie, instead of saying Reagan to run for second term, it says Nixon to run for fifth term, right? The idea that Richard Nixon became president and remained president forever. Like, Watergate had simply been tolerated, and the country had become a darker and more corrupt place. All because of Biff constantly winning his sports gambling because he's stolen the sports almanac. Yes, this is way too much detail about Back to the Future 2 than you expected in this podcast. Stay with me here. So the idea was that there was this corrupting influence that had kind of corroded, like, the morals and values of everyone else around him by seeing him succeed. Doing the right thing was kind of a move for suckers. Kind of a similar theme in It's a Wonderful Life, right? That, you know, Jimmy Stewart is seeing that if he had not been around to be that good example, lots of people around him would have made worse choices in their life. Look, it's been, you know, when all of the arguments about Bill Clinton a few weeks ago, kind of, you know, and the Lewinsky scandal and the impeachment and all that kind of resurfaced, look, the country kind of knew Bill Clinton was a rotten guy doing bad things that he should not be doing, and basically decided to give him a pass. You can argue about why they did it, about partisanship, about the roaring economy, about the past good feelings, Clinton's charisma, all that kind of stuff. But in the end of it, basically the country said, yeah, you know what, if we like this guy enough, we'll give him a pass. How many other guys who are creeps looked at that and said, ah, okay, if I am popular enough, if I am powerful enough, if I am wealthy enough, and if I am well-connected enough, I too can get away with doing whatever I want. I think this is possibly a ramification of that national decision during the Lewinsky scandal, that if you decide to give someone a pass for bad behavior, you should not be surprised if in years to come people learn from that example and say, oh, okay, I expect that pass as well.
Wow. The lessons you can apply from Back to the Future, too. I'm impressed, Jim. Well done.
There you go. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.